Welcome to episode 254 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on November 2nd, 2021. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, Scott and Ben just came out of the Microsoft Ignite keynote and loop you in to all things Microsoft Ignite. In this episode, we discuss some of our favorite announcements and news so far from the Microsoft Ignite event. You take notes on WordPress. Hey, Scott, guess where else you can take notes now?
Where else can I take notes now?
And loop.
Can I be looped in?
You can be looped in with a loop-de-loop.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the most prevalent phrases at Microsoft is, can you loop me into that thing? Like, that, loop me in. Yeah. Now add me to that thread.
Loop so
me
now
in.
The question is, do you get looped into that thread? Do you get added to that email or do you get looped in via loop?
Do I get looped into a loop? Like doing a loop?
Do you get looped into a loop?
Doing a
can you do a loop of a loop?
A loop-de-loop.
Because you can put emails in loop, I believe. So if you get looped in to an email that gets put in looped, do you get looped into a loop via loop?
That's a little too much. How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
As much as he could chuck. A woodchuck would chuck as much as a woodchuck could chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood.
Oh, boy. It's going to be a long day, isn't it?
My focus is gone today. I watched the Ignite. Speaking of, guess what we watched today? Did you watch the Ignite keynote?
I did watch the keynote, and it continues to be a very strange affair. You know, disembodied floating heads.
Floating heads, floating torsos. We
avatars
have an
now.
Upper body.
Yep. Yeah, they're like it's getting weird out there. I think I'd rather stick to just the initials and the little circle sometimes.
Yeah. Well, did you see Susan Hanley's tweet about the floating torsos?
I did not.
So she essentially said now avatars represent what everybody has been doing for the last 2 years on meetings and not wearing any pants.
That's very true.
Our avatars are very representative of what we all do for meetings. We dress from the waist up. So why would we need avatars that show anything more than from the waist up? Even when you're standing or now floating at a whiteboard. I don't know. So this was the return of Mesh. Because Mesh was announced at Ignite. Was it the spring Ignite or was it actually Ignite a year ago when Mesh was first?
I think it was the last one. I think it was spring.
It was when we had the HoloLens dance parties in Mesh as part of the Ignite keynote, I believe.
Yeah, I want to say that was spring.
I think it was. So Mesh made its return once more. And I would say, so this was interesting, right? So Mesh was like similar concept, but totally different feel because Mesh at the spring event was all about the HoloLens and mixed reality and like everybody wearing a HoloLens and standing in a meeting together and having like virtual representations of yourselves within this 3D meeting space. Kind of roughly sums it up. Today, when they talked about Mesh, it was all about now Mesh is coming to Teams. And if you don't want to have your camera on, you can now have an avatar within Mesh in Teams. And it went a little bit further. They showed like avatars and 3D spaces at conference room tables and at whiteboards and all of this. I couldn't get from the brief demos we saw, like how that manifests itself in Teams, other than you can now do avatars in Teams. So you don't need to get dressed at all or do your hair or your makeup or your shave or trim your eyebrows or whatever you do before video meetings. You just put on your avatar now for Teams meetings.
Yeah. So I can't with some of this stuff, right? Mesh for Microsoft Teams bridges the gap between physical and digital, empowering users to connect across devices wherever they choose to live and work from. These experiences will be available as a part of Teams on PC, mobile, and through mixed reality headsets.
Scott, welcome to the Oasis. I think we said that last spring. That's an old joke.
Yeah. Well, at least it's a little bit more of like an avatar to Oasis now. So I guess we'll see.
Maybe. I don't know. Nope, I'm not going to go there. I almost made a... That would probably be an inappropriate joke.
Probably.
Yes. I was going to say something that should not be said on the podcast. So we'll just keep moving on. Yeah, like, I don't know. Can you... I mean, truth be told, I feel like this is gimmicky. I think I get what they're trying to do in that, like, some people legitimately just don't turn on their cameras and they're, I guess they're trying to make it feel more real, but to me, it's very much like, it's one of those things that personally, like, I'll turn on it once to try it and it'll be like, hey, look, it's kind of fun. But am I going to use that realistically? Am I going to use that on a day-to-day basis because I want to show up as an avatar rather than my real person? For me, I don't see myself ever using it other than to just play with it and say, hey, look, this is what my avatar looks like. Maybe there's other people that legitimately are. Like, you get the people, they turn on their virtual backgrounds because they don't want you to see their real backgrounds. Maybe they don't like seeing themselves on camera, but they're okay with seeing their avatars on camera. Maybe this helps from that, where I mentioned it to you, where now I'm not looking at like a bubble with initials, but I actually do get to see a face. Maybe that helps. It's still, I don't know. It still just feels a little gimmicky to me. Or maybe I'm just old and grumpy.
I think it's all good kind of stuff at the end of the day. It's interesting the way that the experiences are presented. Generic gallery view inside of Teams, where you are looking at more, I think, like shoulder up kind of view. Like you want to see somebody's face, mouth, things like that. And then there's the other side of that experiment, which is going, I think, full mesh with the disembodied torso and like, all of that that's coming with it.
That was definitely weird.
It made me do a double take during the keynote just because of the way it was introduced, because they specifically called out the metaverse. And I thought that was really funny in light of Facebook rebranding to Meta last week and effectively taking over the metaverse branding. That was an interesting one to see there. I think there's more exciting stuff in Teams, like beyond this, like there are some meaningful updates around collaboration, the way you might present and do sharing from PowerPoint. Like we've seen better audio modes. So whether that's things like better noise cancellation, background noise detection, high fidelity audio, you know, like I want to share like a Spotify stream with everybody on a Teams meeting, something like that. Like that's all out there as well. And to a certain degree, it's overshadowed by some of the things like Mesh, but there are some real meaningful improvements in the background.
Can I loop in Mesh?
You can do whatever you want.
Or a Mesh loop?
You can do whatever you want. I mean, Mesh is your gateway to the metaverse. Like, so you just take that and you do whatever you need to do with it.
I think the logo for Loop should be the, now I'm completely drawing a blank, but the loop from Halo. Anyways, no, I'm going off topic. I would agree with what you said. I like watching the keynote, I was like, okay, Mesh, yeah, I don't know. Jury's out on Mesh. Loop, I will say my initial reaction when I first saw Loop was one, I was like, they totally ripped off Notion and the whole UI and functionality. And two, I was like, after, I forgot about this, someone mentioned it on Twitter, after Gig Jam and after Mocha and after like all these promises of bringing the Fluid framework to different interfaces, I was, and I probably am still a bit cynical of Loop and how it's going to work, because I feel like all of these products have been products where they're looking for a reason to use Fluid, not necessarily a product that everybody needs. As I've watched it throughout the day and talked to a few people, I frankly do not use OneNote anymore. All of my notes I quickly jot down. I've been using Obsidian for a little while. I never quite bought into Notion, but I think I actually like the way Loop works better than OneNote. And it is similar to Notion. It's similar to how Obsidian works. If the functionality is there, if the syncing works like it should and it's a stable platform, I could maybe get on board with Loop. But all of that said, where I got the most value so far out of today to your point, was getting past kind of Loop and Mesh, because those were two of the bigger ones in the keynote, and looking at a lot of the little updates that do get overshadowed by kind of those big announcements. They want a couple big flashy ones, but there were a lot of little things that came out, especially in blog posts today, that I found interesting, helpful, just little tidbits that kind of get buried in all of the bigger, flashier product announcements.
There was quite a bit that came out. And so far, we've been kind of talking about Microsoft 365. And there were certainly announcements across that, across Azure, whether that was like app dev or infrastructure. Also, there was a pretty big section on like Power Platform and kind of productivity and no code solutions around Dynamics and a couple different things going on there. So there are announcements across the stack, you know, whether it was online components and things like Microsoft 365 or desktop components, you know, that might have been like Office on the desktop, Office on mobile, things like that, all the way to, you know, the back end that runs it all in something like Azure as a compute platform.
Yeah. So I have a couple of my favorites, some that I kind of pulled out that I like. Did you have any that jumped out to you today that...
I was keeping an eye on most of the Azure stuff. Like there's been quite a few things that have been in preview for a while, and lots of them were GAs today, which was good to see. Like I run into kind of preview and lack of support things quite a bit with customers. So it's always good to see those kind of reach GA. I think from, you know, some of those, like when I think about like reaching GA, like VM Flex is GA now. There's always been this capability to do virtual machine scale sets in Azure. You know, I have however many of this D-series VM, they're all the same. I want to spin them up, scale them in, scale them out, things like that. But there's also been this need to say, like, what if I need to mix a different VM series or a VM size into an existing scale set? Like, that kind of broke the rule. Or what if I had a virtual machine that was a member of this scale set, but it's like a single instance? So it's not really something that needs to scale up and scale down, but I want it to participate in the scale set so it recognizes things like update domains and fault domains. And VM Flex is this orchestration mode for virtual machines that lets you do that. So it's a virtual machine scale sets flexible orchestration mode. So that's what I'm talking when I say VM Flex. Like that's out in GA now. And that's a really cool capability. Like I can see that being a huge empowering feature for a lot of applications where you've been potentially trying to architect your way around some of those limitations in the platform in the background. And now it's just front and center for you with this capability to control not only a scale set and scale sets at scale, like you want to deploy 500 VMs, 1,000 VMs, things like that, but you want to run different VM families. Like I said, you want to control fault domain and availability zones. You want to make sure things don't cross update domains. Like all of that is available to you. Or what if you wanted to do something in a scale set, like mix and match a persistent VM with something like Spot Compute? You know, that would have been like two different scale sets in the past, and now you can mix and match that all inside of one. So I think that's like a pretty cool empowering thing that hit GA. We also saw VM guest patching hit GA today. So that's pretty cool. Like if you're looking for capabilities around automatically patching your VMs, like a Windows machine, like any update that's classified as critical or security, you can have those just automatically be downloaded and applied to that virtual machine. So like you don't have to do anything there. You don't have to onboard to update management. You don't have to do anything else. That's just kind of sitting there and it's a capability that you can turn on. You can say like, hey, I just want you to keep me up to date. And I think that was one of the, you know, those blockers for something like virtual machines. It made them just a little bit harder to use to say, when you go to IaaS, you own that. And your area of responsibility falls around things like patching. So now your area of responsibility still falls around patching, but you can offload that to the platform without having to spin up a whole extra service and pay a whole bunch of extra money or anything like that. Those were kind of two, I think, GA things that stood out to me. And then there were a bunch of public previews that just sound like they'd be good to get hands-on with and start to play around with a little bit. So one in the compute space was Azure Container Apps, which, you know, there's been this capability within things like Azure App Service to certainly spin up single instance containers and have them do, you know, whatever you wanted them to do. But now Container Apps is kind of its own offering and it's its own first party service. So not being constrained maybe by some of the overhead that comes with being a part of web apps, it can kind of grow on its own and become its own thing. And I think over time, that'll be really good. Like that'll help to accelerate innovation around things like that platform. So you want to go ahead and build microservices, like whatever that is. If you're doing Dapper, you're doing your own thing, you're all good, ready to go there. You have support like right in this preview that came out already for things like Kata, Kubernetes event-driven auto-scaling. So you can do things like scale dynamically based on HTTP traffic, like all sorts of like really cool things that you can do with services like that. And having it be elevated to its own kind of first party service and not constrained within web apps is a pretty cool thing to see. And then I think one more that stood out to me as well that was a new public preview was a capability called Gateway Load Balancer. So if you're familiar with application gateways, one of the problems with, or one of the limitations of app gateways was you still potentially had to stand your own load balancers up in front of them if you had multiple gateways and things like that. It just got complex and there was a lot of, I think, mental overhead to architect your way into solutions around that. And today they announced Gateway Load Balancer is out in public preview. So that's going to be a fully managed, balanced gateway service that you're going to be able to stand up in front of things like NVAs. So you go into the marketplace and you grab an MVA from Barracuda or something like that. You know, if you stood up two of those MVAs before, you'd still need your own load balancers, maybe app gateways, all those kinds of things in there. Now you can just do this gateway load balancer and stand up your NVAs behind it and still have control over routing and egress and ingress out of the gateway, which is pretty cool.
Got it.
So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud.
Another one that I saw today that just hit, this has been in public preview and at GA'd, was the Azure Trusted Launch for virtual machines. Did you see this one or have you played with this one at all yet?
I haven't spent a ton of time on Trusted Launch. Like there's a bunch of things in that space. There's Trusted Launch as a capability around kind of the whole story of trusted compute. And then there's all the virtual machine sizes and VM series and everything that come along with that as well. So, you know, what kind of capabilities do you get around things like TPMs, VTPMs, secure boot environments, things like that. But I really haven't had too much of a need to get into that. Like I don't need it in my day-to-day kind of workflow.
Yeah. And I haven't used it or needed it yet, but it's that whole concept of, and we've seen it, where malware hides on these virtual machines. It's like, it sits there for a long time until it actually gets activated. And it looks like, and again, I haven't played with it a ton, but this uses, so it's in place for all Azure Generation 2 VMs.
and it allows you to deploy virtual machines with verified signed bootloaders, OS kernels, boot policies, and it uses a bunch of the secure boot, the TPM, the measured boot, boot integrity to just kind of help monitor those VMs and make sure that they haven't been infected, that signatures match, and really that the integrity of these VMs that may sit in Azure remains, and you don't have essentially compromised VMs sitting up in Azure for a period of time that maybe have some type of malware or some type of threat that has gotten injected essentially into that VM somehow is kind of how I understand this. It sounds like they're already using it a lot with the Windows 365, with the cloud PCs to help secure those. And they're just kind of rolling this out now. So it's available all Azure public regions, no additional cost. Most commonly used for those operating system images just to really help harden and secure those VMs.
Yeah, if anybody's interested in this, I would go and read up on Azure Confidential Computing. Like, the documentation is fairly comprehensive. There's also a section in that documentation that would walk you through use cases and scenarios. You know, is this something that is important to you, or should you be looking at it? Like, are you in a vertical where, you know, this is definitely a way that you should be leaning? Like, maybe that's financial services, like FSI, could be government, whether that was federal government, state and local, anything like that. You know, you could take a look at it and see if it's something that, you know, would fit your need. There are, I think, limitations there. So you mentioned things like the requirements for Gen 2 VMs. You know, Gen 2 VMs still have several quirks to them when it comes to things like being able to onboard to backup and things like that. So just keep that in mind, like when you're taking a look at it. But then, like, once you start to get down the rabbit hole, yes, you can look at things like virtual machines, certainly, and kind of building out your own trusted enclaves. There is also confidential containers, so you should go and maybe check those out as well.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. So another one with VMs, I'm going to keep going down the VM path, with Windows 365 Enterprise specifically. And I was actually just talking to a client about this yesterday who is using Windows 365. I am using Windows 365 and they spun up Enterprise right away. I spun up Enterprise and quickly found out. And when it first, like, we both like spun it up the day it came out,
suckers,
wasn't super clear at first. I know, right? Was the fact that you need a hybrid AD environment. You need some type of domain controller in order to do Enterprise Windows 365. Business supported Azure AD joined. You didn't need that on-prem domain controller. Enterprise, you need an on-prem domain controller. They are making progress on this. So this is not a now Enterprise supports Azure AD, but it is a confirmation that support for Azure AD joined cloud PCs is coming. They're currently validating functionality. There are some select customers, yep, partners using
it. So lingo there, that means it's in private preview.
Yeah, private preview. And it will be in public preview very soon. I don't know what very soon is. I mean, I've seen features on User Voice that were coming soon for like 3 years. Hopefully,
there are features on User Voice that have been coming soon for 7 or 8 years. Three is pretty good.
I don't think this is going to be a matter of years. I would guess this would be like weeks or months, maybe. But if you are looking at that Windows 365, you're looking at enterprise, business, kind of the differences in those requirements, you should be able to hopefully get public preview relatively soon here with just Azure AD join and not having to do a hybrid environment.
Yeah, there is a sign-up form that you can go and fill out if it's something that you are interested in, or if you have an organization that's going to have potentially a lot of cloud PCs behind this. Like, it's a way to put your name in the hat and potentially see if there's either room in that private preview for you or just be updated in general as engineering progresses and maybe it comes closer to something like a public preview.
Yep, there's a link and we can put this. This link may get you in the private preview, but it also has a link for the first to know, unless you're at the end of the email list when public preview is available. Or you have a slow email provider, in which case you could be the last to know on that email thread. But either way, you can go sign up, get some alerts, stay updated on the rollout of that functionality. Other things, so there was a bunch of... There's an article out here. We'll link to this one. What's new in security and compliance in SharePoint, OneDrive, and Teams? There were a few of these articles that popped up today. And as normal, they all popped up before the keynote even started. So I was reading about all the announcements before the keynote started. There was a lot of information in this article, and buried down towards the bottom, this is one I feel like I fairly gave Microsoft, it was justified, a hard time about this lack of capability. And it is finally coming the end of this year, and that you will be able to have channel site management in the SharePoint Admin Center. And I don't know, I saw the channel site and I'm looking through to make sure this is private. I'm assuming it just says channel site management, but truth be told, you've always kind of had channel site management because a channel was just a folder in a site that already existed. This experience, I read this too quick. You'll have a collective view of all sites that are associated with a team and its channels. So this is going to start bringing those private sites in particular into your SharePoint Admin Center so that you'll be able to see, manage all of those, not only those private, those public sites that you already had, but be able to see those private channels as well. So the example they give is like you click into an active site for a team, and then you actually can get the list of all of the other channel sites, and they have a new channel site column there where you can see how many channel sites you have associated with a particular team site. So again, really bringing that, the concept of now I have all these teams and these private channels and teams creating all these SharePoint sites. I couldn't see them. I couldn't manage them. I didn't have much visibility into them.
Now you can see them. You just can't manage them.
You can manage them. You can click on one and you can go see the set storage limits and other details about them.
I can click on them. That's the IT pro management dream right there.
I can. What am I going to do?
Give me
with
a
you?
GUI and I will administer things.
Exactly. I'm sure you can script it too.
You say that now. Don't be surprised.
Okay. So the biggest thing was the view into it. Like that was missing for me. Like, you never had any idea if a SharePoint site created by a team and somebody went in and created 10 private channels, how could you go in and see that other than going into like the team itself and having rights to it? This at least gives you that visibility in the admin center. This is what happens. You get into Azure, you get away from SharePoint, and you try to rain on my SharePoint parade.
That's because the grass is greener on the other side. There's like certain things that I don't worry about anymore. And one of them is patrolling Teams channel sprawl. Inside of private channels.
Yeah, I still deal with that. So there were a bunch of other ones. This article has, I don't know, there's probably like 10 different things in here. It talks about stuff. There's stuff around auto labeling, SharePoint syntax, data access governance, some co-authoring with documents encrypted with Microsoft Information Protection. I think we talked about that. That was in preview. That hit GA. That continuous access evaluation, we talked about this as well with permissions, the whole zero trust and like actually killing access as soon as it was killed rather than waiting for certain tokens to expire and for it to call back. Yeah. SharePoint tenant rename. Your URL rename for your SharePoint tenant site is now in public preview. I still would not do it, but it is in public preview.
Yeah, not recommended. But if you have more than 1,000 users, go ahead and try it out. Let us know how it goes.
No less than 1,000. Oh, no. Yeah, less than 1,000. If your tenant has less than 1,000, well, it's SharePoint sites. Less than 1,000 SharePoint sites and OneDrives, then you can use it. If you have more than that, you got to wait.
I recommend so just waiting as long as you possibly can for that one.
I recommend just not ever doing it. There was one client I actually talked to that there was possibly a use case for this. Like their SharePoint site tenant was like testcompany.sharepoint.com because they spun it up as a test. And they actually were not using SharePoint at all yet. And we were talking through, you know, you're not using it. You don't have any content out there. You're not using Teams. Like it was legitimately spun up and you were doing only Exchange. and they talked about renaming it. And I'm like, yeah, you guys might have a use case scenario where I would actually be willing to give this a try just because you're not using anything that it would actually touch.
Yeah. Back to that whole preview support kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Or things that I don't worry about. Tenant rename is in public preview. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. So the other one, I got another one for you, Scott. You know that episode we recorded a couple months back where you were having issues with topics and like the syntax topics, and they started showing up in SharePoint pages and like not necessarily always linking to the correct relevant information. Mm-hmm. Guess what you can do now? You will be able to do soon.
I can still complain about it.
Yes, but you can complain about it in Outlook, the body of an Outlook email now, as well as in the body of a SharePoint site, because you are going to now have topics in your Outlook email.
I do not like this, said Sam I am.
This one was another interesting one. So I read the post about it, and I probably need to go read it a couple times again. I couldn't tell from the first pass through and kind of the initial information about it is, like, it says, when you're reading messages in Outlook, you'll see a simple indicator to show you all of the topics referenced in an email. When you're composing an email, you can add a hashtag to add a topic highlight, or have Viva Topics suggest topics based on the content you type. What I couldn't decipher from that little bit is, are you only going to see indicators about topics if the person composing it added a hashtag? Or is Outlook going to dynamically insert topic references in the email for you?
Yeah, I don't know. If it works the way like it works in SharePoint pages, it's automatically going to insert it for you and you have no control over it.
Right.
And it causes much heartburn, like crazy amount of heartburn, unbelievable amount, just because of its potential to misidentify things for the wrong audience.
So that one, again, that'll be interesting. I'm curious to see how that one works a little bit more. But I figured that would be a highlight of your day, so I wanted to share it with you.
Yeah, like I said, it's going to give me more heartburn and potentially like a heart attack. But sure, like, yeah, let's go ahead and just call it out.
Why not?
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
Oh, what else? I could keep going. There's a bunch of, like, that's all the little stuff. Like, that little stuff kept popping up today, and I was getting a lot more value today, actually reading blog posts and all these, some of these finer details were what was getting me more excited from Ignite today than kind of the big high level stuff.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what else is kind of out there that's fun and maybe like a new service. Let's close with one more. Because we were talking about kind of resiliency and BCDR and everything a couple weeks ago, and maybe how you think about architecting that, we never really talked about how you think about like testing that and going through the motion around it. Did you see the announcement for Azure Chaos Studio?
I just saw someone chatting about it in another group I am in. I have not read the announcement yet, but I saw a blurb about it.
Yeah. So Chaos Studio is, again, a kind of first party proper service that is out there to help you embrace chaos engineering and be able to throw all sorts of kind of wrenches and complications at your applications as you're standing them up. So that could be, you know, you want to go through like a BCDR drill kind of thing and have something like Chaos Studio, you know, taking services down in front of you just as you're figuring that out. I think it would be an awesome way to go ahead and run live site practices. You know, hey, we do like live site reviews between, you know, region A, region B kind of thing. Let's go ahead and stand those up and make sure that our processes work, that our tooling works, whatever that happens to be. You could use it for some type of analysis, like maybe like in that live site life cycle, like after an incident occurs, anything like that. So the cool thing about Chaos Studio is as a first party service, it is directly integrated into ARM, like it's a proper resource inside of Azure Resource Manager. So as you're spinning up chaos experiments, anything like that, you can use standard Azure tooling like ARM templates, policy, RBAC, like all that stuff is there and ready to go. There's a component of Chaos Studio that allows you to automatically integrate with App Insights. Because it supports RBAC and everything, you can certainly use Azure AD for securing any of your resources along the way. It's got a bunch of kind of built-in fault controls, like experiments that you can run right out of the box with it. You can set those up to run in a series. You can do them as parallels. You can insert things like time delays. You can target specific regions. Like it's a pretty rich service from everything I've seen from it so far while it's kind of been kicking around. So it's good to see it come out and yeah, hit the light of day for public preview.
Yeah, I was looking through this. So you can do things like steps in these experiments of shut down a VM and whether you do like an abrupt shutdown or not an abrupt shutdown.
Yeah.
Whether or not you want the VM to restart after it shuts down and then set up like different steps that it goes through. So like you said, you can shut down a series of VMs and steps if you want to. Can I go run this against Azure AD? What if Azure AD fails? That's always the one I'm curious about.
You can certainly try it and see how it works out for you.
Agent-based faults. VMs, it looks like a lot of this right now is targeted towards VMs.
It is pretty heavily focused on compute, but if you think about it, at the end of the day, there's just a ton of stuff running on compute anyway. So you could run Chaos Studio against something like Azure Kubernetes Service against AKS. So you stood up that you stand up that AKS cluster and you want to do something against that. Because that's all just compute at the end of the day. And I think over time you'll see more services onboard to that. Like it is not just compute focused. Like Cosmos DB is in there today. And that's directly integrated in. So you can do things like, you know, configure that as some place for fault injection, time delays, anything like that that you need to. I think you can also do fun things like, hey, let's not shut a VM down. You can do stuff like add memory pressure to a VM. So if you want to actually test like scale in, scale out on a service, and maybe you were writing like little helpers or little runner agents to go out and do things like spike CPU for you automatically. Now you don't have to do that anymore. This can all just be measured inside of the service. I guess configured, run, and measured in the service would be like the really cool thing there, right? To bring it all together.
So some of your chaos could essentially be almost like doing a load test against your environment, making sure it can handle a massive influx of traffic or resource consumption or something along those lines.
So you can do CPU pressure, you can do memory pressure, both physical and virtual. You can do disk IO pressure. You can do DNS failures, network latency, Cosmos DB failovers, machine shutdowns.
Well, what about disks filling up? I feel like I see that one. Like people just don't monitor their free space on disks and all of a sudden they fill up and everything falls apart.
I don't think disk space is in there, but disk pressure is in there. So, you know, that's a component of disks filling up, right? Because as you drive more IOPS, you potentially approach limitations of disks where you could be throttled or things like that. So that's a good one. There's really simple things in there like stop a window service. You know, say you're running something as a series of window services across N machines in a scale set. You could have it randomly stopping that service across all those things. You can have it apply network latency. You can have it do network disconnects for you. You can have it change network security group rules for you. I think that's a pretty cool one, right? Just to watch that stuff, you know, change automatically around you. And it's all just in a nice little kind of package managed service.
Yeah. And it all just runs. So it just runs up in Azure. You go spin up Azure Chaos Studio in Azure. Pricing looks like it is, it varies. So there's no upfront cost for it, but it says you pay as you go based on your experiment execution. Chaos engineering experiments are charged based on the duration that your experiment action runs, based on targets, different resources. So they don't have a lot out there about pricing yet, other than it just varies from one to the next.
Yeah, like all things in the cloud, you're using some compute in the background, so you're going to get charged for that right at some point.
You're going to have to get charged for that. Nifty. I might have to inject some chaos into my environment and see what happens.
Yep, well, we'll get you to stand that up and play with it in all your free time.
Yeah, I got to go finish these blog posts yet. I don't even know how many more I have left. I've only made it through, what do I have? My unread count for the day is now up to 250.
Yeah.
I started the day with zero. I prepared. I had zero blog posts to read in my RSS feed at 9 o'clock this morning. And then, or at 11 o'clock when all the embargoes lifted and everything went live. So from, and I've already gotten through 50. I think there are about 300 blog posts that have gone live in the course of the last 6 or 7 hours.
Yeah, I think for this round, like in years past, there are kind of consolidated sources of news that you can go to. And maybe we can kind of wrap it up here. But they've had things like the Book of News that have continued to come out over the years. And as someone who's like, you see the Book of News maybe like a little bit earlier on the media side of things. And every time, like every cycle we go through with this, I'm like more and more jaded about it and the value that it's going to bring to me, like as somebody who wants to know about these things ahead of time and be able to talk about them ahead of time. Like you really can't based on that anymore. You have to go out and either solicit a bunch of interviews, which people don't have time for a pre-event, or you have to wait for things like all the blog posts to come out afterwards. So if you're, and my anecdote there would be, if you're somebody who's relied on like the Book of News to give you a bunch of pointers on where to go and where to find things, like I don't think it's that this year. Like it's a big splash marketing kind of thing. And you'll find like even a lot of links in the Book of News don't point you to the places you want to go anyway. Like you'll still have to do a bunch of research and digging. Like you're almost better off just going out to your tech community and picking a community and following the RSS feed for that or something to get you to where you need to be.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And even, I mean, to the extent you and I both kind of had that same thought because we saw it ahead of time and we talked about, we're like, do we record a podcast ahead of time to release the day of Ignite or release after? And both of us kind of said, there's not enough in there to really get a good podcast together. And most of the stuff we even talked about today was not in the Book of News. And if it was, it was under a highlight. Like there's updates to SharePoint compliance and security, or updates to Teams compliance and security, with like a paragraph that essentially said there's updates coming to compliance and security and there's some stuff around sensitivity labels. It's like two or three sentences. None of the details that we covered today, we really saw ahead of time. This was all based on, like you said, tech community posts, blog posts from the product teams. I was unimpressed with what we were able to glean ahead of time this year, which is why we decided to record this a few hours after the keynote and after everything got published. So we could at least, obviously I didn't get through everything, but so we could at least look through some of it and try to talk with a little bit more of that technical detail, which I feel like a lot of people listening to this are the same way. They don't necessarily care about the marketing fluff. Go read these blog posts. Don't even bother with the Book of News. My two cents as well.
Good advice. I'll put a link in the show notes anyway, if anybody does want to go check it out.
Go look at the Book of News.
If marketing fluff is your jam, we'll have you covered.
If you need something to go give to your C-level executives to get them on board with something, maybe,
you can use the Book of News. I don't know. But with that, a little bit longer, but it's okay because it was Ignite and we definitely have lots more stuff to dive into in more detail and play with that we can talk about because there's other stuff. I started Viva, all the Viva stuff GA'd. I've started playing with some of that, so we can talk about some of that too coming down the road. And
you're just a glutton for punishment, but we can get into it. Yeah.
Well, there were Viva Learning. I wanted to experiment.
Just stop.
With.
You gotta cut it off at some point. It's okay.
I do, but I want. Yeah. Anyways, thanks. Scott is unplugging me and making me go back to work, and he has a meeting. So we will talk to you next week, Scott, or later this week, I guess.
Like in very few days. We'll be what, back.
Like 2 days from now? Because we're recording this on Tuesday and we have another one we will probably record on Friday. All right. Enjoy reading your blog posts and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.